All right, welcome to the drone show, because I was accused of droning on in the last show, and we said, James says at the end of the show, let's talk about drones. We didn't, so let's talk about them.
Absolutely.
So, James DeMayo, sports venue, give me three words, venue, arena, and?
And stadiums.
And stadium expert, yes. Right. So you said at the end of the show, oh, we didn't talk about drones, and all of a sudden we got intrigued. Paul Brousseau had to leave, but let's talk about that. What do you know about drones? Why are they a problem?
Well, certainly with open-ended venues, you imagine Circuit of the Americas, 140,000, 200,000 people, and someone getting that type of technology and using it destructively.
I'm surprised it hasn't happened, frankly.
Yeah.
We're talking about like the easily to purchase for yourself remote control.
$1,200 at Radio Shack,
absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've become far more powerful, can travel longer distances.
Exactly.
Carry items
and certainly, you know, disperse chemical, biological, radiological, you know, obviously over a large crowd. So, again, it's definitely a concern in open-ended stadiums with large amounts of people. The Department of Homeland Security is doing a really good job, the best they can, obviously, but they're also battling the free market enterprise groups that don't want that kind of governmental regulation. We've seen that drone technology is useful. UCLA has used it to film their linemen. We've seen certain, situations where if anarchist groups can get that type of technology, they can attach a paintball gun, as an example, to the bottom of a drone and kind of navigate a course, you know, with the implication that could be a loaded 9mm.
Oh, no, you missed the YouTube video of somebody put a 9mm on a drone and actually fired it remotely.
Right.
Yeah, it can be done. It's very easy to do.
So we're seeing now, certainly, you know, within the sports security space, I was just doing a little research for the show, just Dubai Airport. Their entire airspace was shut down. 22 planes were diverted for 69 minutes because of the emergence of drones.
And this is just like Radio Shack drones. We're not even talking about
No, this is a military grade. There's nothing fancy.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying. So my point is that, you know, what happens when the military grade drones, which, you know, just like most technology that's created in theaters of war, that technology will make its way back home into the free market because those companies like their shareholders and want their shareholders to make money, so they will find new markets to place that technology.
I think
so
we're
what
kind
do we
of
do?
There. I think we're kind of there already. I mean, it's not, can't fly 5,000 miles or whatever those are. The military can, but basically it functions with the bells and whistles, absent a ammunition system, right? It has GPS. I can turn it on, and let's say I'm a jealous boyfriend. I say, "Are you going out tonight, Hillary?" "Yeah, I'm going." "Okay." And I grab your phone and I put the software program on there, and you get in the car and drive. The drone's going to follow you automatically based on the GPS location of your phone and film you and do whatever else I say to do. It's amazing, the technology.
So how do we mitigate that as individuals?
Well, what are we doing in a sports arena? I mean, there was a book written when I was a kid. Was it called Black Sunday? Where a terrorist got a blimp, hijacked the blimp, you know, like the Goodyear thing.
Yeah.
And they covered the bottom of the blimp with plastic, explosive, and little BBs and darts. And the idea was it was going to go off, and when you have that shrapnel, it would have killed everybody in the stadium. Really scary book, written in the 70s, I think, or something. Excellent, excellent book. And now we don't even need to use a blimp or kidnap or hijack a blimp. We just put, you know, let's just program 25 drones to flap there and blow up. Program 25 drones just to fly into the crowd and hurt people, right? Put knives on them. It's all kinds of things you can do with it.
Well, you know, I think it starts with education. Two professional groups that I hold memberships with, the National Center for Spectator Sports Safety and Security, NCS4, affiliated with the University of Southern Mississippi, and the International Association of Venue Managers in Grapevine, Dallas, Texas area. I've been to a few of their conferences where they've brought in, you know, officials from the Department of Homeland Security that have shared that information, the videos, the knowledge with the frontline venue staff, the venue directors, to make sure everybody knows what to do, obviously, if they're confronted with some type of adverse situation concerning a drone. So certainly it starts with education, tweaking policies, procedures, protocols, knowing what to do and having those effective communications with law enforcement in the event a drone, again, makes its way over an open-ended stadium.
So this is on your radar. No pun intended. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. I think it's concerning. I really do. And like Chuck mentioned, you know, obviously Charlie, but, you know, there's more and more in the space now.
So, have we seen actual attempts at sporting venues where people fly these in?
Well, you know, again, I mean, it doesn't appear that anything's done intentionally, but that doesn't mean that, you know, people
things have happened, but exactly. It wasn't malicious. It was just, hey, I'm going to goof around, take a picture right. of the game or something.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Could be probes or tests. I mean, that's what
exactly.
they do.
Exactly. Reconnaissance. Yep.
So, I was going to post this on Facebook. I saw it at IAC West. There's a company that makes a drone gun, right? And it fires a projectile that opens up into a net and takes the thing right down.
Right. Yeah.
It's
I
totally
saw a
cool.
I saw a video. Like, yeah.
And then they have some that shoots some sort of electronic pulse that, you know, takes out the mechanism. And so there's some good things out
so
there.
So then
to
now
do
we
it.
Need snipers at our arenas?
We need drone snipers. It's a new profession.
With net guns.
Sign up.
What is happening to our
Star
world?
Star Wars. Right.
Scary making.
Well, I think they use drones in professional sports now. They at least have
the
camera on the wire.
Sure. Exactly.
The camera's
yeah.
on the wire. Yeah. But I think they have some actual drones now I've seen that are being used, right?
Right. I mean, again, you know, it's...
film companies are all over it.
Yeah.
It's amazing technology.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's amazing technology. It's ever-changing. And again, it's concerning because, again, if it's used destructively, it's going to create a host of problems for people trying to protect that space.
I got to buy one before they make them illegal. And we'll hover it over the show here and take a picture of us, the GoPro.
And that's a when, right? I mean, that's not an if. Somebody's going to put those two
well,
things
I mean, the only thing that it's not an advantage. It's just they're small enough now that it would have a minimum. You can only load it with so much explosive or so many things that it would not blow up the whole stadium because of their size, but do a lot of damage. Right. But put 25 or 30 of them doing the same thing, right?
But home delivery companies, you know, they're just talking about having
it's
your package
crazy.
Delivered to your front door right. via drone. Mm-hmm. Those guys and those big corporations are not going to stand by and let you get rid of that potential vehicle.
So we talked about the discourse on Facebook about these things where people pick one side or the other. I don't pick one side or the other. I just say, here's the law, let's follow it, and let's go either side of the law to fix it. But, you know, this extreme stuff...
It's just Chuck's side.
...doesn't work. No, it's not. I'm very malleable. In the hands of proper people. It's absolutely true.
Noted.
But, you know, on this sort of thing, I think drones are cool. I would like to have one for the show. I mean, I can do a lot of things with the show where I program it and it follows me around when I'm doing an interview. It's great. It's great stuff, right? But people are always going to use something for evil. It's just the way it goes, right?
Right.
The question is, what are we going to do as individuals? Are we going to sit around and wait till it gets to be a problem? We can have a conversation about it, and we can try and do something about it that's reasonable. And if we made drones illegal, guess what's going to happen? People are still going to have drones.
Sure.
Just like they're going to have guns. So it's a similar gun argument, right?
Mm-hmm. It's like the 3D printers.
3D printers. I'm buying one of those, by the way.
Yeah, but that freaks me. I mean,
print badges.
Cool. It's so cool. I see the applications, you know. People can print a part for a car that they no longer manufacture
right.
that part. That's cool. But what is going to stop someone from printing a gun?
Nothing that I can see. I saw. I'm going to buy an HP Z1 computer, which is like really high-tech editing stuff, and I'm going to get a printer, 3D printer with it. And I saw a demo from HP, and I don't know how they did this, but they 3D printed a link, right? Like a piece of chain link, you
mm-hmm,
know.
Mm-hmm.
And then they hung that between a cable and a car, and they picked up a car with it, and it hung above the ground. It worked. I don't know how you get that tensile strength out of the material, but it was amazing. I mean,
if you can use it to replace parts in complex mechanics.
I saw that demonstrated years ago at Idea Lab when they first came up with the idea, and they came in and I said, what is that? I said, it's a 3D printer. And I said, what's it do? Well, we can print a picture of your face, for example. I said, why would anybody want to print a picture of my face? I didn't get the concept. And now it's here. And that's only within 6 years. It was in infancy in five, six years ago.
You can get in a candy. They have a candy shop where you use it, you know, that's corn syrup instead of, you know, plastic. And you can make your custom what have you.
You can 3D print your own drone, right?
I'm sure.
I've seen a demo on that kind of stuff. So.
Right.
How do you get ahead of it all? I think you just have to try,
right?
You know, but you can't sit around and say, we're going to ban everything because mm-hmm. then people make it more attractive. And if they start making, well, you know this, for example, every time somebody says, we're going to look at gun control, we're going to ban guns, people go out and buy more guns, right? So I wouldn't even talk about guns if I was a politician. If I didn't want to have so many guns, I wouldn't bring the thing up. But people run out immediately and buy more ammo and buy more things and they think that's going to be taken away. So start talking about drones being taken away, mm-hmm. and drone sales are going to go through the roof.
Absolutely.
It's just human nature, right?
But there has to be some reasonable legislation. I mean,
I think you go to FAA regulations, and it's an airplane. Mm-hmm. So you can only fly it certain levels and certain heights and whatever. And,
right.
you know, they could, certainly with the technology, they could find that thing on a radar. And guess what?
In certain stadiums, right? Like no-fly zones.
No-fly zones, exactly.
Yeah,
especially mega events.
It goes above a certain height, blast it out of the sky. Go ahead. It's not, it's nobody's in it. It's not a people thing. So just blow it out of the sky. That's what I would do. That's legislation I would have.
Unless it's.
We'll send an attack drone to attack it. Then we'll have drone fights. Then we'll have contests and things like that.
We're going to have dog fights over stadiums with drones.
It's a crazy, crazy world. Happening? That's for okay. sure. All right. What other technology are you worried about in stadiums?
Well, again, it's.
Used for evil instead of goodness and niceness.
Well, certainly, you know, we talked about earlier, you know, just the threat of, you know, active shooters. But, you know, technology in the command centers, the megapixels, scanning the ebb and flow of the crowd, you know, understanding how to utilize the software packages.
Are face recognition, is face recognition software there yet to be used in venues? Is it getting there?
It's probably not where it should be, you know, biometrics as well. But I'm sure that technology is being introduced. But at the same time, you know, it's a process as far as whether or not, you know, again, it's going to be actually implemented. So, you know, again, technology is key because, again, as we mentioned earlier, the integration of technology with training, you know, places us all in a position of strength, obviously, to, you know, safeguard that space.
So let's say we put all the people on the FBI watch list that are in a terrorist training camp. You know, all these things are out there. They're persons of interest or above a person of interest. And we put their photos into the database, and they walk into a stadium, and, oh, we just identified Hillary. She's one of our people we're looking at. She's walking in here. Do you have a problem with that?
I don't, because I think that if you buy a ticket, there's a certain amount of relinquishment mm-hmm. of your privacy. That if I want to go to this game, if I want to go to this event, if I want to be in this group, then I don't get to be anonymous.
It's a public venue.
It's a public. But anonymity, I don't think in that situation is a right.
Now, it's interesting. You've missed some of the shows. Obviously, I know you've watched every single one of them.
Of course.
But you remember we had AMAG on here. We had a couple of people with the privacy issue. So I went to Cisco in San Francisco and interviewed them about smart cities, right? And what they told me about, and maybe you can speak to this, mm-hmm. is that Americans and privacy are not in the same place that France and privacy is or Germany and privacy is. The privacy restrictions over there are far greater than they over here, believe it or not, right? Yeah. They would not allow you probably in France to do facial recognition at a stadium because that's private, private, private. Mm-hmm. And I say, you're in a stadium with 100,000 people and you're on TV. What's the privacy issue, right? But is there a slippery slope, James, if we take a picture of the guy and we stop him and say, that's you, and you're not really a criminal yet. You haven't committed a crime. You're just a person of interest. Are we going to say you can't come in here? I mean, what do they do on an airplane? Is it similar to an airplane analogy? Mm-hmm. If you're on the no-fly list for an airplane, you show up, what happens to you? Are you arrested? You're not arrested because you didn't know you're on the no-fly list, probably, right? Some people are, obviously. I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's to Hillary's point again. It's something that it's kind of a work in progress, but, you know, we don't want to infringe upon rights, but at the same time, we have to, you know, there's that you do give up that privacy when you buy that ticket.
Yeah, I mean, going to the Super Bowl is not a right. Yeah. Once you decide to go to that game. Now, if it's in my home, if you're going to fly a drone next to my window in my home and search my face out, yeah, I got a problem now. But even one could argue on the street corner, I think that technology is maybe overreaching. But a stadium where you've purchased a ticket, there are all kinds of terms and conditions on the back of a ticket. I don't have a problem with that.
And you don't have to go if you don't want to.
Correct.
Exactly. Private venue.
Exactly.
What about the public, though? So in Germany, if you took a picture of your face on the camera on the street, your face is private unless there's a need to know and there's a level of government that allows you to interact with it. But in the public arena, sitting, you know, on the Reaper bot having tea, your face is not available. Under video surveillance, unless there's a cause for it.
That's what I'm saying. On the street corner, I think we're having a different discussion.
Really? You don't think it's the same as the venue?
Absolutely not. If I'm just walking down a public street, I don't think that government officials or a police jurisdiction ought to be able to simply capture my image.
All right. Because it's getting closer to your house, that the idea, and not a group event?
I can't simply remain in my home. I have to be able to freely move about my community. So I don't think that just simply being a member in a community, one ought to relinquish their privacy. That said, when you move into purchasing a ticket to go somewhere, going into someone else's property, I think that there is an understanding and an acceptance of certain terms of conditions to participate.
So in a sport venue, what part of the entertainers... the sports people, right? The stars, the football, the basketball guys. Sure. What part do they play in any of this? Do they participate in safety issues? Do they are they self-aware that, you know, they're a potential target for an attack in a way, or is that just something that's handled by their people?
I think a lot of them are being a little bit more vocal about it, especially with the U.S. Open, excuse me, the French Open. You know,
Monica Seles, but years ago.
Yeah, yeah. So they're starting to, you know, understand that, you know, it's their work environment. It's their workspace.
Yeah, it's their office.
It's their office.
Yeah.
You know, for 2.5 to 3 hours, however long the match is. So certainly just what came out of the French Open, you know, some of the leading tennis players in the world have been vocal about their personal safety in light of the challenges. So they're feeling it. They're feeling it.
And while a patron can be aware of their environment and maybe looking around them to see if something is or is not safe, you can't ask that for an entertainer or someone or an athlete who has to use 100% of their focus on what they're doing.
That's you. I mean, you can't think about your safety on the stage as much as because you got to focus on the show.
I have a measure of awareness of the audience.
So there is live and close.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then when there's a situation like we had somebody with a behavioral problem who was there, you're aware of it. So I think it's a little bit different than an athlete who has to really tune out everything. We are, as in the theater, we are attuning to the audience.
Now, what did you do with that guy, if I can ask?
Just assimilated it and recognized that he was making a comfort sound and just, you know, recognized pretty quickly that it was harmless and something that he was just doing and wanting. And we want to share a story with everyone. So certainly to be inclusive of someone who is having... who may not be as capable as others.
Is political correctness killing us because we're not removing people from stadiums or theaters or venues or clubs because, you know, we don't want to offend anybody? I'd be a nasty, hard-ass venue man. You know, if your behavior is going away from nice and what people are supposed to do, you're out.
But
we're
someone with Tourette's syndrome, you're going to kick them out because they have Tourette's?
I don't know. What if they're freaking out the people next to you? Don't they have a right to enjoy the show? I don't know.
We have a code.
It's a tough call.
That's tricky.
And Tourette's, that's kind of – that'd be hard to –
it's tricky.
My hat's off to you as an actress. You can do a show with somebody with threats.
We did exactly that.
But we have codes of conduct. Okay.
Yeah.
So again,
let's talk about codes of conduct. That's
a good
point.
It's, you know, websites disseminating the information through social media prior to the fans, patrons showing up at the venue, stadium, or arena, educating them as to what the acceptable, tolerated behaviors are. But again, if they're not following the code of conduct, we've seen this in the NFL. I mean, you know, fans are banned. You know, if they're fighting, if they're intoxicated, they have to follow the rules.
Is that pretty common against all the sports venues, or do some sports do it more than others? Football more than basketball or something?
Well, I think, you know, the NFL's been really, you know, instrumental in, you know, obviously, you know, codes of conduct and you know, barring fans, you know, from attending future events. But, you know, again, there are a list of acceptable behaviors, and we need to disseminate that information. So, again, that gives us the ability to say, okay, it's time you have to go home.
At Staples Center, when you're there, there's a little scrawl on the Jumbotron that says if somebody is acting inappropriately, mm-hmm. to text a certain number.
Exactly.
Oh, that's good.
You know, I think that's certainly legit. I feel comfortable doing that.
Right.
So there's a code of social conduct that we don't really speak about. It's just there. Right. And the silent code is you and I are going to behave. Because if I behave, that's good for you. And if you behave, that's good for me. So behaving together is good for everybody, right? And what we're finding now in these violent places and violent attacks and people is that people are getting away with bad behavior much longer. They're going farther out. They're pushing the envelope. And we're not saying, wait a minute, at the first onset, I don't like that. I'm walking away from you. You can't be part of my club because I don't like your behavior. And you can say it in a nice way early on. If you wait till it goes too further and the guy leaves the group and leaves your clique and becomes our shooter in Orlando where he's alienated and he feels people are against him, those are the guys that think about killing because they've been ostracized or something.
Right.
So I think part of this has to do with public conduct that we do engage in. And if we knew, by the way, you know, what do they say? 10% of the people are bad guys. When I was a cop, that's what they used to say, right? 10% of the population keeps committing crimes and things like that.
But it can't be that low when you hear...
No, it is about that.
When you hear sexual assault statistics and you hear that 1 in 4 women or 1 in 5 men is a victim of sexual assault, you can't tell me that only 10% of the population are the predators. It is a much larger problem.
Repeat offenders. So I can't do math very well. So let's say we have 300 million people here. It's 10%. That's 30 million people, right? So is that...
You're saying that 10% is responsible for... a quarter of the women in this country being sexually assaulted.
Well, the numbers are that we know that James, if he gets arrested, is going to get arrested again. It's the same people. It's not new people getting arrested all the time. Tell me I'm wrong. That's basically correct, right?
That's basically correct.
Maybe the number is higher. But let's say 20%, let's say 30%, let's say 40% of the population was bad. It's the zombie apocalypse. There's nothing law enforcement can do about it. There's not enough army.
I just think that we're. I think the degree or the what counts as bad behavior has moved slowly and slowly further away from safety, let alone common courtesy.
Oh no, I agree with you. I think this is the problem. So if we can get back to not being worried about political correctness and not being worried about offending people and so on, and say, listen, I just don't accept that behavior from you.
Right.
We need to change it. We're going to come back to people behaving responsibly, which makes everybody safer. It's really the only thing we can do as a society gets more complicated. And I used to joke about this years ago when my grandmother had a Vogue book of etiquette from 1920-something when she was in college in Chicago. And we used to read it once in a while, and I would go, wow, look at how people behaved. I mean, it was formal. It was yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. And if a guy opens the door on the left, it means this, and on the right, and your forks. And people used to make fun of me. Is in the police department, I used to say, you know, if we didn't have so many bad manners, we wouldn't have so many problems and crimes. And it really comes back to that. There's a social behavior that we all have to act together and accept.
Social contract.
Social contract. Right. And I can't, and part of that is what? Not being prejudiced, not being all these crazy things people
right. But
see.
But genocide
right?
still happened when, you know, chivalry was more present.
Because people didn't say, like Chamberlain, no, Mr. Hitler, you can't come over here and do this. Because they're afraid to respond. And people, we've talked about this before. People do more to avoid pain than they do to seek pleasure, right? Most people are not confrontational. I am, and people say that in a bad way, but I'm not confrontational. I'm just not afraid of your crap. Come, bring it on. I don't care. I'd rather deal with you now because if I avoid that conflict, it turns into a bigger conflict.
I think that I don't disagree with you. I think also, though, there is a measure of eliminating the us and them. Whether it's us and them, men and women, us and them, people outside of the country, us and them, religion, whatever, however you want to demark yourself, when people start to accept each other as community, regardless of their history, genealogy, et cetera, you have a much better chance because it's much harder to kill someone who you see as one of your own.
Oh, it's impossible, actually. The people that kill cognitively
or rape
move away from
or assault
no, I agree.
Or any other crime. So I think maybe that's a good general lesson that we could teach to people
is that
we are all one. We just are.
In a sports culture, I'm not a sports guy, by the way. Right? I'm not comfortable around. How are you doing? Throw the football and drink the beer. I don't get it. I respect it, but I'm not a sports guy. But it is a culture, right?
It is. A
culture. So tell me what the sports culture is that gets people impassioned and they love their team and, you know, root for the home team and all that kind of stuff. And those sort of people are a different group of people than going to the theater, for example,
right? It's a completely different demographic.
It's a demographic and a culture that
exactly.
behaves a certain way in general.
In general.
But they all behave very well most of the time, see?
Most of the time, yes.
In Europe, I don't get the soccer riots.
Hooliganism.
We don't see that here, exactly. though. Why don't
it's,
we see that here,
tribal.
By the way?
I think it's just, you know, again, the message is out about what's our tolerated, accepted behaviors. And, you know, operating a venue, it's incumbent upon the folks that are in security positions to have alcohol beverage control programs. So, again, for those 2.5 to 3 hours, you know, the taps stop flowing after the third quarter or what have you.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that.
Or everybody gets a certain number of drinks, right?
Right,
you have
exactly.
to punch a card or
but
something.
But you have to manage that crowd because, again, there's different types of crowd, sub-crowds within crowds.
Right.
And they're there for different reasons. And that's where the demographics and the crowd control and, again, the monitoring of social media, you know, what kind of tweets are going out during the game and the codes of conduct. But
are a lot of venues watching that stuff now?
Absolutely.
Oh, good.
Absolutely. And I think it's important that we continue to do that. Proactively.
But that's also an us versus them, right? I mean, it's red versus blue. You know, sometimes it seems just that basic. I follow sports, but right. I'm not one of those, you know, I like the Dodgers, but right. I'm not going to get in a fist fight over it.
Right.
But that's the same mentality stands, right? It's us versus them.
That's true.
So we need to, at least in sports, there's maybe that's an outlet for that instinct, but I don't know how we evolve away from.
I think it's changed. So I just joined this page on Facebook called. I went to Nestle Lavin Elementary School in the 60s and 70s, right? And all of a sudden, all these people are popping up when I'm 5, 6, 7 years old, and we're going, hey, Pete, hey, Barb. You know, we all remember each other, right? Because to remember what you are as a child was a much simpler life. But one thing that Pete wrote on here, which was just poignant, was that, okay, here's our neighborhood. He described it. It was basically off Ventura in Tarzana, where it was all cul-de-sacs. So once you went in there, you're not getting out until you drive the same way. So it had this weird community feel to it. And he says, I don't get what's going on nowadays. You know, we had the black and white family down the street. We had the Hispanic family down the street. We had all the, and nobody cared. Nobody thought about it. We didn't talk about it. All we did was go to grade school and say, where are you from? And where are your friends from? And what's your pedigree? That was a thing to share as a sense of pride, as a sense of interest, as a sense of sharing. And we didn't see all this crazy us and them stuff. It was just, that was the hood. That was your hood. And those are part of your people. And that was a great tribe, so to speak. And we all got along. And now it's just not that. And I don't get it. Because people claim we're so progressive, we are way backwards.
No, there's been
compared to when I was a kid. I grew up in a black and white family, by the way, and we had there was incidents where I was called some names once in a while, right? Just but kids are Lord of the Flies stuff, you know. That's how they are. Mm-hmm. But the parents and stuff in the neighborhood, they weren't like that. It's just so different now, and I think that's the media. It's easier for people to look and say, "Oh, look, that's us over there, and that's them over there," because there's this visual thing. Whereas you're with me, like you said, you're part of my group. I can't destroy you because that'll hurt my group, my neighborhood.
There has been, I think, in the last 20 years, a new assault on multiculturalism that, you know, people don't really appreciate the fact that we are the country that we are because we are so diverse.
Because of it, right.
Correct.
That's the only reason we're that way.
Correct. You don't get to be who we are and as innovative as we are by being a homogeneous society. But there are people who think that there, you know, all just segregation or homogeneous nature is a better way. You know, your family was miscegenated and therefore, inferior.
It certainly wasn't.
And is ending the country.
Yeah. I mean,
there's a whole measure of that.
I mean, because I grew up in the 60s and when I, you know, born in 61. So that's when this was coming up of age, right? The riots and, you know, civil rights and things. And then it seemed like it was okay and it got better. And then all of a sudden, I don't know. The 80s, maybe it was the bad clothes and the hair from the 80s. I'm not sure what it was that did it, but something kind of flipped. Are you seeing any cultural changes in sports over a period of time? Does that match cultural changes in society's us and them mentality?
That's a terrific question. I guess it probably involves some more study. But, you know, again, when you look at the demographics, there is a science to crowd control. You know, spacing, we talked about earlier.
Yeah,
know,
that's the physics, right?
The physics side.
But what about the cultural side? I wonder if that would play into a decision to do something differently in a venue.
Well, you know, again, managing human conflict is something we talked about, de-escalation. Mm-hmm. You know, so being in charge of our verbal communication skills, it's incumbent for guest services and security. I call them the gatekeepers. But, you know, for them to be in command of their verbal communication skills, you know, from the point of contact, because we talked about the social contract. So, again, if there is a disgruntled fan, to de-escalate that person. If they're up here, obviously, emotionally, you want to bring them down
right. With
a calm voice and treating people with dignity and respect. And I had some training out in Scottsdale with the Vistalar group, which at one time was verbal judo, but now again it's, you know, just the folks there understand the importance of treating people with dignity and respect and just calming situations down. And I think that places ownership groups in a position of strength to protect themselves against liabilities, because the last thing we want is a police shooting inside a stadium. We don't want something where it's escalated when we can, at the point of contact, de-escalate that situation and mitigate that risk.
And I think people are just stressed out. I think there's more stress now. I think we have more information.
Yeah,
there's sort
is.
Of information overload. I think there's a measure of anxiety, certainly a measure of psychotropic medication.
That's
more prevalent. Mm-hmm. So there are a number of factors, but you can kind of see it playing out. Certainly anyone who drives in rush hour traffic in Los Angeles can tell you tensions are high.
Absolutely.
You know,
sure. It's information sickness. I think the human brain hasn't caught up with all the data that comes into it.
Right. It's a little Orwellian.
Yep.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, it is. Very interesting. We may have solved more problems again.
Maybe if we identify enough of them, we'll solve them.
There's too many. It's information overload. At least we tried. James, thanks for our little bonus segment here.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
And you're welcome on the show anytime. And, you know, send us some tweets and things, information once in a while, and maybe you can come in and do some little bonus segments for and stuff. And thanks for coming in from all the way from Texas.
Are you
going to
come see my show, Chuck?
Thank you.
You have two chances left this weekend.
Do I get a free ticket?
ArchwayLA.com. If you plug the next run of the next show, you can have a free ticket.
Okay, I'll do that. It's a deal.
All right, you got it.
All right. deal. You see it on TV here. We're shaking our hands. All right. Tune in next week for another episode of Security Guy Radio, and follow us on iHeartRadio now. That's the big news.
Congratulations.
Yeah. That's wonderful news.
Thanks for tuning in. Good night. All right. Thanks.